again, on a similar line, rather than looking at what's the next best diet for you, maybe I might jump from keto to intermittent fasting to a meat-only diet to something else. Now, I'm not opposed to any of those because I've trained a lot of people and worked with a lot of people that have used a lot of those, and some things work better for other people than others. And, you know, I'm not someone that's vegan, but actually I do find there are some people that do better with a healthy vegan diet versus a healthy non-vegan diet. There are some people that can do better on certain things. So I'm not opposed to any diet, but again, look at what you're currently eating and look at the things that, you know, that shouldn't have a part within that. Look at the low hanging fruit in terms of, is it what I'm eating in the evening that's letting me down? Is it that extra 200 calories? Are those extra 200 calories sneaking in, in the evening? What can I swap that for? Can I get slightly better here? Am I eating some junk first thing in the morning that's then affecting the rest of the day just from a mindset perspective? Okay, well, let's look at just changing that morning up. So again, looking at your current diet and what you can maybe adapt or delete out of that to put in something that's positive, rather than trying to jump to another diet.
You just heard the voice of Gareth Sapstead, AKA the Fitness Maverick, online fitness coach, writer, and personal trainer for the BBC. In this episode, Gareth explains how you can look great naked 365 by optimizing your training, nutrition, sleep, hydration, and supplementation. If you're ready to look, feel, and move better than you ever have before, then stick around, because this episode will help you to look great naked 365 days of the year. Welcome to the show. My name is Ali West, and since 2008, I've been working in the health and fitness industry. In the space of just under 10 years, I went from being a glorified treadmill cleaner to the owner of my own 9,000 square foot gym, Kinetic Fitness, here in Nottingham in the United Kingdom. Plus helping thousands of people along the way, both offline and online, to improve their health and well-being. Since 2015, I've been on my own journey of self-discovery, learning how to improve, optimize, and master my mental, physical, and spiritual health on the deepest levels. Now I want to help you do the same by sharing my own wisdom and some of the wisdom of the brightest minds in health, fitness, nutrition, biohacking, and spirituality, so you can become optimally healthy in your mind, body, and spirit. If you're ready, then let the show begin.
Hello and welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show, where we inspire you to live a longer, healthier, happy, and more joyful life. We cover everything you need to know to be optimally healthy in your mind, body, and spirit. Are you ready to become the ultimate version of yourself? Well, let's dive into another episode with your host and guide by your side, Ali West.
Hello and welcome to episode 113 of the Kinetic Fitness Show podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today and taking time out of your day to tune in and listen to today's episode. It's now only a week to go until I and the team here at Kinetic Fitness can reopen the doors once again and welcome back all of our members and clients, and hopefully some new members and clients as well. So I'm really looking forward to the gym reopening. I'm excited, I'm buzzing, I can't wait to get back to it. So something to look forward to and some light at the end of the tunnel. So let me ask you, are you looking forward to getting back to training? Are you going to be going back to the gym, or are you going to continue working out from home? Let me know, drop me a message, drop me an email, let me know what you're going to be doing. I love to hear from people and learn how they're training and how they're taking care of their health and well-being. I know from speaking to quite a few people that some people are not going back to the gym, they're going to continue with running or working out from home, but I know many, many people are itching to get back to it. Maybe you're somewhere in the world though listening to this and you've been going to the gym the whole time. Your gym never closed, you never had a lockdown. So if you have been in that situation, then that's amazing for you. And I have also been lucky enough, me and my wife Sarah have been lucky enough to able to still train because we own the gym. So we've been able to go in through all the lockdowns and do our own workouts, but I know many, many people can't wait for the gyms to be back up and running. Anyway, that's enough about the gyms. That's enough about Kinetic Fitness. Let's get going really with today's episode. I have a great episode lined up for you today. And in today's episode, we are going to be focusing heavily on training and helping you to look great naked. 365, not just for 1 week of the year, all year round. My guest today is one of the top online coaches in the UK, if not the world, and he has helped thousands of people to get in the best shape of their lives. Before we fully get immersed in today's episode, I would just like to mention our sponsors of the show. I'd love for you to listen to them as they will help you, help me, and also help the sponsors of the show. But if you do decide to skip over this part, then all the links can be found in the description of this episode. Our first sponsor is Pure Himalayan Shilajit. Shilajit is an ancient mineral from the Himalayas, which has been used in the East for its powerful benefits for thousands of years. Shilajit helps to increase your energy and mental performance, plus many other benefits. I've personally been using Shilajit for a while now, and I have noticed improvements in my cognitive performance and energy levels. I'd love for you to benefit from this powerful ancient mineral, so I've teamed up with my good friends over at purehimalayanshilajit.com, and they are offering every listener of the show a 15% discount off any order of Shilajit. Simply hit the link in the description of this podcast, place an order, and at checkout, bang in the code AliWest, that's AliWest, A-L-I-W-E-S-T, to bag your incredible discount. Our second sponsor is Mudo Health. Mudo are a DNA testing company, and they make testing your DNA and getting your own genetic profile super easy. All you do is you order your testing kit from their site, it's mailed out to you, you take a simple saliva test, send it back to their lab, and within a couple of weeks, you'll get a breakdown of your genetic health with over 90 plus reports on your DNA and how you can make improvements to your health on the deepest level, all laid out in an easy user-friendly mobile application. Mudo has revolutionized my health, my clients' health, and my family's health. That's why I've teamed up with the guys at Mudo to help the listeners of the Kinetic Fitness Show improve their DNA health as well. They are offering all listeners of the show an amazing 20% off any DNA kit purchase. Simply hit the link in the description and add your kit to the basket and use the code ALDNA at checkout. That's ALDNA, A-L-D-N-A at checkout to claim your amazing discount. Right then, let's get stuck into today's episode and introduce my incredible guest today. My guest today is Gareth Sapstead, aka The Fitness Maverick. Gareth is a personal trainer, online coach, writer, and personal trainer for the BBC. Yes, he is the resident personal trainer for the British Broadcasting Corporation. Gareth has been helping people just like you to get strong and look good naked since 2005. You'll spot Gareth in hardcover books, research papers, and in some of the most respected fitness publications in the world. Gareth is a coach, fitness maverick, and forward thinker. He's accrued tens of thousands of hours coaching in person, from celebs to athletes to busy professionals. During this time, he has helped many clients to overcome every obstacle under the sun, ultimately allowing them to regain control of their time and physique. He currently holds a position as fitness director for science-driven supplement company Myoband, and you can get a discount on Myoband using Gareth's code. So just use the code MAVERICK10 to grab a bargain on the supplements that he personally uses from Myoband. Gareth also has a master's degree in strength and conditioning, a bachelor's degree in sports and exercise science, and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist with NSCA. So what will you learn in today's episode, and what are some of the key takeaways? Well, you'll find out about Gareth's story, how he went from being a strength and conditioning coach to an in-person personal trainer and eventually transitioning his business online. You'll also learn how he thrives off creating solutions to a variety of problems. You'll find out about Gareth's methodology and systems for helping people to look great naked. You'll also learn how Gareth helps people to maintain their results. You'll learn why it's best to go after the low-hanging fruit first rather than the shiny objects. You'll also learn how to keep your training regime interesting and enjoyable. You'll learn about working out versus training and what the differences are. You'll also learn how many times to train per week and what is the optimum number of sessions you should do each and every week. You'll also find out about functional exercises and strength training. Gareth explains supplements and which supplements he recommends. Gareth gives his top 3 tips to look great naked 365 days of the year, plus much, much more. Gareth is one of the friendliest and most helpful people that I have met in the fitness industry, and I know that you will get a ton of value from this episode. As always, if you enjoy today's episode, please share it, grab a screenshot and post it to your social media. Tag me in it, Ali West Coach, and also tag Gareth at The Fitness Maverick, and we will share it with as many people as possible. Also, if you are able to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, then please leave me one. Reviews help me to inspire and reach more people, and I love reading them. Let's get to it. This is episode 113 with The Fitness Maverick. Enjoy. Gareth, welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, thanks. Good to have this conversation and chat with you properly. And hope lockdown's okay for you at the moment. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. We'll give a bit of context to this interview because we only officially met last week, wasn't it? Was it last week or the week before?
It was 2 weeks ago now. Doing a photo shoot for my book being published by Human Kinetics, and you know, it's as someone with a gym yourself that's obviously not being used at the moment, it's a great source for, you know, me to go to and film some stuff and video some stuff, and so we met a couple of weeks ago, had some good conversations out of it. In between, me awkwardly stood there without my top on with the anabolic coconut oil all over me and all that stuff. You know, we did have some good conversations. So yeah, we have met in person.
And we're going to extend those conversations a little bit today on this episode. But before we do that, mate, could you just give myself and the listeners a little bit of a backstory, a little bit of context to who you are and where you've come from, what you do, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so my background really is actually originally as a strength and conditioning coach, but then nowadays I'm more known as a fitness trainer. You know, something like my Instagram bio, for example, explains it all in one sentence, and that's, you know, I help you look great naked 365. So as I said, you know, transitioning from a strength and conditioning coach into a personal trainer or you know, fitness trainer nowadays, really. So my background really started off with working with elite athletes. My formal education was in strength and conditioning and exercise physiology and biomechanics. So I always wanted to work with athletes and more that, as I said, that elite level. So when I was younger, maybe it was, I think, 14, 15 years ago, I was working with a lot of elite rugby teams, soccer teams, athletes from British jiu-jitsu and judo teams and things like that. So a really broad range of athletes from different sports, and that caused me to kind of have to be adaptable all the time about what, you know, the type of person I was working with and the types of training that I was doing with them as well. And I got to work with some awesome athletes and some great teams and had some good mentors and things like that. But at the same time, because to be honest, actually personal training, you actually tend to make more money than what you would do as a strength and conditioning coach, especially a strength and conditioning coach straight out of university or something. We've got a weird thing in this industry where as a strength and conditioning coach, you're almost been taken the mick out of when you've come straight out of university. You know, you're expected to be doing years and years of internships and things like that before you can ever get paid. And I wasn't kind of in the situation where I could do years and years of training elite athletes and not get paid for it until I got a lead job within a team. So I was supplementing my work with, working with general population. And mostly at the time, it was just working out of a Virgin Active, you know, a big commercial gym. I think there were something like 15,000 members or something. And I became pretty popular as a personal trainer, kind of filled up my books with people. And that, again, allowed me to work with all different types of people. and, you know, apply some of the stuff that I was learning through working with elite athletes into, you know, into kind of your general population and things like that. Because everyone wants to feel better, look better, perform better. You know, so there's a lot of kind of overlaps between them as well. And over the years, I've actually just enjoyed training the general population more than I did the elite athletes. So as we've kind of gone on throughout the 15 years, I've actually transitioned more into training general population people and people that want to, you know, look great naked, and less of the athlete side of things. And yeah, nowadays I'm mostly known as under the Fitness Maverick banner. Yeah, you know, as I said, it's been a bit of a career where I've trained a variety of people, and I suppose a lot of my methods are known to be kind of very innovative and also very kind of adaptable as far as kind of people's concerned, where I don't have one single training philosophy. My training philosophy is to train whatever's in front of me, you know, so I'm very kind of open-minded. You know, I'm not kind of by the books in terms of, you know, this is the way that works best. It's very much like, okay, who have I got in front of me, and how can I, you know, adapt to that person and apply, you know, a sound form of training to that person.
Yeah, I love that. That's the best way to be, in my opinion. And it's a great story, mate, because I can draw a lot of parallels from my story as well. It's very similar. I was a coach, football coach, not so much strength and conditioning, but actually coaching football. And I had the same thing. I wasn't making any money with it. And I was like, oh, I'm training these people or coaching these people. A lot of it was kids. It was like 7 to 14 ages. And yeah, it was like more like babysitting a lot of the time. And I wasn't making any money. And I got into fitness. I kind of accidentally fell into fitness. And then the rest is history. So it's interesting how we kind of transition from working in sports or professional sports, and then going into working with, you could say, the general public or the general populations. It's interesting. Some trainers go the other way though, don't they, mate? They go from being a PT and it doesn't really work out for them, and then they go into strength and conditioning.
I think with those types of people, that it almost happens by accident. You know, you're working as a personal trainer down your local gym. You know, an athlete sets foot in the gym and wants to work with a trainer. Well, it doesn't matter whether you've got a strength and conditioning qualification or something. You know, you're seen as someone to have a fitness qualification, and therefore you can train that person. So that person, you know, that athlete comes to train with you, and then suddenly, you know, you're a fitness trainer that works with athletes, and then that person might also then get a look in within that club that athlete trains for, or that athlete plays for. So, you know, that's a kind of another foot in the door. But as I said, for me, it was more rewarding to work with kind of general population people. And actually, you know, going back to what you're talking about, working with 7 to 12 or 7 to 14 year olds, I actually found those more interesting to work with than I did the elite, the really elite athletes that I was working with, because they were, you know, the 7 to 12 or 7 to 14s were a lot more challenging, because you had to develop those, you know, those fundamental movement patterns. You know, I had less equipment to work with when I was training with them. And then you've also got that element of, you know, that the parents are asking every question under the sun of, why are you doing this with them? Why are you doing that with them? Is this going to stunt their growth? You know, so it was actually kind of more challenging in a way to work with those younger athletes than it was the older. And I enjoyed those actually a lot more as well. But as I say, you know, mostly what I do now is, you know, I don't beat around the bush. Most people want to look great naked, and that's what I kind of, what I give really. But it's a sustainable way to kind of look great naked, and, you know, without the cranky joints and falling apart, or getting ready for a photo shoot and then suddenly after the photo shoot gaining a few stone afterwards. You know, it's about looking great naked throughout the year, and kind of, as I said, that sustainable approach to fitness that I kind of advocate.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in just a second, mate, because I want to dive into that definitely. But the first thing I want to ask you off the back of your story is, you've mentioned that you found that you enjoyed training these general populations more, and you got more of a buzz out of it, and you was earning more money. But why do you think that was the case? Why did you decide that these were the people that you loved working with, and what was it about these people that made you want to stick with that route?
I'm very much someone that thrives off of creating solutions to problems. So when you have, for example, let's say you're training 6 to 10, you've got a busy schedule, you're training 6 to 10 one-to-one clients every single day in a busy gym, and each of those people, let's be honest, most people that set foot in the gym that you're training has got some form of injury or a little niggle or something going on. So you've got a lot of kind of problems in front of you with different people with different goals and different body types and structures and lifestyles. You've got a lot of kind of problems that you've got to overcome. So you've got to use your brain a lot more. You've got to think a lot more. You've got to create a lot more solutions to things, which is to me exciting. It's interesting. Whereas when you're training a group of athletes, especially at the highest level, I'll be honest, they're the easiest people to train, the athletes at the highest level, because most of the time it's just about maintaining. And I'm sorry to say it, but something like the Manchester United strength coach has one of the easiest jobs in the world because it's just about maintaining that level of fitness and making sure that that player gets on the pitch and he's not broken, Whereas actually in those medium kind of levels in, those tier two football clubs, they've got a much harder job because they've actually got to train the person that's aspiring to be at that much higher level. So they've got to work to see some improvements within what they're doing. And as I said, same with, same with those grassroots levels, in that it's a lot more interesting. You might be more limited with equipment. You've got a mixture of different abilities as well to train. So little Timmy over there might have to train a completely different way to little Tom over there. So it's just a lot more interesting. As I said, that's what I found that appealed to me about more than personal training and your general population, is that there are a lot more solutions, and it just kind of kept my brain busy, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're working with those athletes, or we talked about the competition people as well, is that they're very much like they're regimented, aren't they? They're like, almost without sounding derogatory, they're almost like robotic. So you just give them the stuff and they'll do it, and they're already 95% of the way there already, or even 99%. You're just giving them that little extra bit. Whereas when we're working with the average Joes, you could say, is that they need a lot more attention, and there's a lot more facets and moving parts to analyze and look at, and as you say, work on solutions for them. So yeah, I get that, mate. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. On that same, related to what we're talking about here, I train a good handful of IFBB Pro professional bodybuilders. And as you say, without sounding derogatory, they are almost like robots, in that you can give them anything and they will do anything. Whatever you put on paper for them, they will do it. Which at the same time as being great and meaning that they can get some great results from things, it's also bad because they will literally just do what's on that sheet of paper. So any problems, niggles, anything like that, if anything needs changing, if something doesn't feel right to them, they're less likely to kind of stick their hand up and ask for something to be changed, because they're willing to work through that pain. They are like robots. They will literally just do what's exactly on that piece of paper. And I love training, my IFBB pros, because there's something at the end of it as well. So I've got a few at the moment preparing for competitions, especially in the States at the moment. And it's leading up to something, so our training has to be kind of really adaptable, and our training also has to be very much about their mindset as well at the time, because at certain stages of competition, if someone's 4 weeks out where they're not going to be wanting to do exercises that they hate, they're just trying to get through the day, at that point. They're just trying to get 10,000, 15,000 steps in a day, for example, at that point is going to be a challenge to them, let alone when they're getting through their weights workouts. So you're trying to keep things interesting for them during that period of time, because they're not going to be gaining much muscle mass during that period of time. That's the reality. You can't do that over 4 weeks. But what you are trying to do is trying to, tighten things up a little bit and make them feel good in those last few weeks before, leading up to that competition. So they're also really interesting people to train, but as you say, they are like robots as well.
Yeah, sorry to all those people. We're not being horrible.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. So we you mentioned that you don't necessarily have a specific like methodology, but I'm assuming you do have some kind of framework. So let's maybe like role play. So say I contacted you and then I decided that I wanted to work with you. What's the kind of process? What's the system? What would we go through to take me from where I am now to potentially where I want to be if I'm working with you?
Yeah, good question. So most of what I do nowadays and for the past few years is more online coaching. So as I said, a lot of my clients are based in the US. You know, I started online coaching a couple of years ago and transitioned out of in-person training into online. You know, I still train a small handful of in-person clients just because I like doing that. You know, I like kind of, you know, I hate to use the analogy, but I like being in the trenches. But as I said, most of my work is online. So what we do actually is start off with something like this. You know, we start out with a Zoom call or something like that, or over Skype or whatever. And that's actually just more me to get to know you. And that's part of just forming that coaching relationship, which starts off with, well, do you like me as a person? Do I like you? Are you someone that's going to listen to my programming? You know, are you in the right headspace to be able to, you know, get a proper plan in place? And, you know, is it kind of realistic for you to be doing that right now? So that's more about kind of the psychology of it. And, you know, are you the right person for, you know, that online coaching is going to work for? You know, are you in the right headspace for that? And then, yeah, we'll go through some kind of standard questions and things like that. But to be honest, what I do anyway is after that, we'd have that call, which, as I said, for me is more of a psychological thing in terms of, you know, are you a good fit? Are we a good fit? Most of the stuff that I actually really want to know after that is stuff that can be done via a form, you know. So it's a case of ticking boxes, you know, rating yourself on certain movements, where you're at right now, writing down what you're doing right now, and even just knowing what you're doing right now or what you enjoy doing is a really strong indicator of where we start off with as far as kind of programming is concerned. And yeah, that kind of goes to a system, I suppose, in my head of, okay, this is the training program we've got to start off with for you. Let's put some stuff together for you based around obviously what you've told me and what our forms are going through. And then I'll throw a program at you, which from the get-go is not going to be 100% right anyway. And I will tell you it's not going to be 100% right, because what I want to do is throw a program at you and then see how you deal with that program and get some movement analysis by doing that program as well. So send in some form check videos. Okay, let's see, you know, I might have programmed this style of squat in there, but actually looking at this, I need to change this for you to, you know, because you might get more depth doing this. Or looking at this form check, I can clearly see your hips need opening out first, or you need more stability at the bottom of that squat before we give you this variation. So as I said, I actually prefer to, in a way, assess you by actually giving a program that I know isn't going to be 100%, which no program I can give you from the get-go, no matter how much I know you, is going to be 100%, but because it needs to be adaptable anyway. So, you know, I'll give you something from the get-go, and then we'll adapt as we go along according to what I'm seeing in front of me. And as you know, you do online coach yourself, and you've been an in-person trainer for as long as I have. When you get a client come to you, the best type of assessment is literally just taking them through a training session. We can throw any movement. Yeah, we throw any movement assessment at them we want to. We can throw any kind of, we can do some body fat with them. We can do some, I don't know, vertical jump testing or whatever we want to. But actually what's going to give me the most feedback is to look at you going through some basic movements during a training session, you know, and of being able to adapt on the fly. So that's how I treat things of, you know, we go into a personal training session. You know, I've put some stuff down on paper that I want us to try, which is, you know, I'm delivering that online. So, you know, in person, I've put some stuff down that we want us to try, and then we'll take you through the session and, you know, we'll adapt things on the fly according to what I'm seeing in front of me. And then the next session, well, that's more likely to be 90% there. And then the next session after that is more likely to be, you know, 99, 100% there. And then obviously we adapt as we go along. So the way I treat online coaching is I can try and make it as close to in-person coaching as I can, and adaptable as I can. But then also my criteria is, well, unfortunately, I can't message you every single day and be like, okay, Yeah, Ali, are you going to the gym today? Ali, are you going to the gym today? Are you eating this? So from the get-go, from that Zoom consult, I need to make sure the right person that's got a little bit of motivation, but you know, is going to be able to work through that online coaching and can at least drag their butt to the gym that day to start off with.
Yeah, definitely. There's a few things I want to touch on off the back of that. I remember when I first did all of my biomechanics qualifications, they used to say this term. It was the movement is the assessment and the assessment is the movement. And that's kind of what you use and what you're saying. So yeah, that's how I've operated for 9, 8, 9, 10 years now is, I've got an ailment. It's fine. You're just going to move and I'm just going to watch you move. And then we'll go from there.
That's it. You know, when I finished my master's degree, actually, I got really into the functional movement screen by Greg Cook. So going through, you know, so the theory is that just like taking someone's blood pressure, you know, is kind of a standard of, you know, when a GP might meet you for the first time, that if you meet me for the first time as a client, I'm going to take you through a movement assessment and I'm going to rate each movement based on, you know, a 0 to 3 scale. And then the more and more I did that, the more and more I actually found I was using it less and actually just jumping straight to a training session that had some basic movements in it, because I was getting just as much information off of that training session as I was doing that functional movement screen. And that functional movement screen took me 20, 25 minutes or something to go through everything. And the client wasn't being, I suppose, bought in or wasn't buying into you necessarily at the same time. They just wanted to be there to work out and train. You know, they want to move, they want to feel good. So actually I found I was able to psychologically get them in a better place, as well as me get more information by doing the boring thing and just doing a workout with them. You know, and that workout might have been doing some basic stuff like some goblet squats, some inverted rows on a TRX, some push-up variations and some kind of hip hinge or something. And from that, you can get a really good picture of where someone's at that point, their strength levels, you know, how they move, what exercises might fit them as well. So, yeah, it sounds boring. But, you know, unfortunately, the training sessions are going to tell you a heck of a lot more than going through movement screens and going through all this battery of tests, which you're probably never going to do again anyway.
Yeah, that's it. And it's more engaging for the client as well, because when they're doing like stepping over a bar or stepping onto a box, it's so boring and they're not engaged in it. And yeah, you might be assessing, but you're not really having that back and forth. And yeah, I'm so for just taking them for a workout and seeing how they move, for sure.
And it sounds boring, doesn't it? But because everyone wants the fancy thing. Everyone wants to, I don't know, every personal trainer wants to be able to, for example, put that client on a table and go through some kind of assessment of, okay, let's do a Thomas test, let's look at your hamstrings or whatever. But how's that applicable to real life? Well, I'm going to get more information just seeing if they can, I don't know, do a single leg, you know, single leg Romanian deadlift, you know, just using their own body weight. Can you touch your toes? Can you hinge your hips? You know, just something basic like that that's actually applicable. Can you balance on one leg? Can you do a lunge? You know, can you squat with your own body weight? Just basics. Tells you a lot.
Yeah. Move like a human.
absolutely. Yeah. Humans don't lie on tables whilst someone's there lifting their leg up. Oh, yeah, that's a bit tight. I mean, that's not how life works.
Yeah, for sure. So you've got this, you said this little slogan, you've mentioned it a couple of times, of like looking good naked and looking good naked 365. Other than the stuff that you've mentioned about the programming and stuff, how do you help your clients to achieve that and go about it? Because what you see a lot in our industry is you see these people, sometimes they work with trainers, sometimes they don't, and they get like really amazing results and they feel great, but then they end up plateauing or going backwards or sometimes being even worse off than when they first started working with a trainer or trying to achieve their goals. So I guess the question I'm getting at is how do you keep that maintenance? How do you keep them either staying the same or progressing even more?
I think unfortunately we're part of an industry where marketing is a massive thing. And I suppose like with a lot of other things, people want quick results. They want to see an immediate result. And that's easy when you're I don't know, when you're taking a pre-workout and 10 minutes later you're buzzing. But it's not the same when you're trying to get someone to, you know, to look great naked, to lose some body weight. That's going to be a process that you're only going to see results from after weeks and months and sometimes years. So as I said, we're in an industry where marketing is a big thing, and you're going to see, you know, so many before and after pictures, so many transformation pictures and things like that. And unfortunately, you don't see the story or the full story behind that transformation picture. That transformation picture might be like, okay, here's a 90-day transformation. But, you know, what was happening before those 90 days? You know, maybe we did a cut these last 90 days. Maybe, you know, we stripped everything off to get you in awesome shape for a photo shoot or something. But actually, you know, that body was built over years beforehand. And, you know, things like that, they just kind of skew people's perceptions, and I suppose put people's they make results unrealistic for people when they think they can achieve things within that period of time. So my whole thing is, okay, sure, I can get you in great shape over that period of time, but actually let's look at it from more of a long-term thing. How can I also get you in shape in a way that's sustainable? So being sustainable, being you know, your joints aren't feeling cranky at the end, you're not feeling like absolute junk every single day you wake up, you're still able to function as a human on a high level, you're able to sit and write something, you know, you're not living off of, you know, 20 cups of coffee a day because your energy is so low and you need something just to kind of keep you alive. So it's, as I said, it's a more sustainable approach to fitness. So a lot of my stuff is about, yeah, is optimizing technique to get the most out of things and to kind of teach you what the best movements are for you in the long run. But it's also about avoiding exercises that are going to cause pain and unwanted wear and tear in the long term as well. So I suppose what you could say for a lot of people, it's actually applying joint-friendly bodybuilding techniques to a lot of these people, or joint-friendly strength training techniques or power development techniques to a lot of these people. And then just, as I said, shifting them towards that mindset of you know, using those exercises more, and the exercises that are beating you up more, using those less, I suppose.
Yeah. So where does nutrition and other elements of health and well-being come into your programs and your plans and your coaching? How much of an influence do they have in what you do?
I'm a big fan of going for the low-hanging fruit. So one of the first things people tend to ask me, so we'll look at Instagram, for example. People always message and ask, what supplements are you taking? Because people always want to know what the quick fix is. You know, what supplements are you using? You know, what supplements shall I buy? If you're an 18-year-old kid and you're going to the gym for the first time, you're not asking what training program you should be doing or what things you shouldn't be eating. Your first question is, oh, what supplements should I get to start the gym? You know, and then maybe, yeah, a few years down the line, then they might look for someone to teach them how to write a good program for themselves or things like that. So my thing is always the low-hanging fruit. So one of the first questions I'll always ask before what your goals are, before what you're training for right now, and even before your general nutrition and what your macronutrients look like, the first thing I'm asking is, how much are you drinking and how much sleep are you getting? Because if you're not optimizing your sleep, then everything's going to have a knock-on effect from that. You know, if you're not sleeping well, your insulin's going to be messed up the next day and you're going to be craving more food. Your brain's just, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. Your brain will go, shit, I need to eat a lot more food, because your insulin's going haywire, your blood sugar's going haywire. You know, when you're not sleeping well, your energy levels are low, so your workouts aren't going to be the best as well. And we can go on and on and on about how sleep affects things, you know, and it's even in the long term, it's effects on Alzheimer's and things like that. But as I say, it's one of the first questions I ask is, you know, how much are you sleeping? Which puts people off, because they actually have a conversation with me about their training and lifting weights and whatever, and I'm asking them, how much are you sleeping and how many liters of water are you drinking a day? but it's the low-hanging fruit. If we can sort those out, or at least make you more aware of what you're doing on that front, then everything else can kind of fall into place. You're going to get better workouts. You're going to get, you know, your energy levels during the day is going to be better. You're going to be more productive at work. You're going to have a better sex life, etc. It all kind of adds into things. And it's far better than any supplement on the market. So yeah, they're all always the things I go for, is the low hanging fruit. And then it's with regards to your training, it's not, okay, let's give you this amazing training program that's completely different from what you're doing at the moment. It's okay, let's look at what you're doing at the moment. Maybe let's take out the stuff that isn't working and swap it for some stuff that is working. So half my job as a coach is looking at someone's program and actually deleting the useless stuff to add more good stuff, rather than, you know, trying to give them something that's completely different. And it's the same with nutrition as well. It's okay, how are you eating right now? Well, let's take that out and that out and that out. Maybe this week we'll just take one thing out and we'll swap it for this one thing. Instead of, here's a piece of paper, this is how I want you to eat for the next 20 days. You've never tried any of this in your life, but I want you to try and enjoy that. That's not going to work, and that's not going to be sustainable. So it's about taking out the bad stuff gradually and then just putting in some of the good stuff from there, rather than like a complete Biggest Loser overhaul, going into your house with a black bin bag and taking everything out of your cupboards. Don't eat this, don't eat this, don't eat this.
Yeah. The biggest thing I want to point out to everyone that's going to listen to this and watch this off the back of what you just said is if you're trying to get in shape and you want to look good naked, it's a process, and it's the long-term game, like everything to do with health. It's not like you can't just you can achieve it quickly, but you're going to have more long-term success and you're going to enjoy it a lot more if you get into the process of it, if you make habitual lifestyle changes, and if you think 10, 15, 30, 50 years into the future, you're going to get a much better return, much better bang for your buck out of it. But as you said, we marketed to with these slogans and these quick fixes, and everyone wants instant gratification. And I think anyone listening to this should just kind of take a step back and realize that it is a bit of a journey and it is a long-winded process, and not to rush it. It's going to take time.
Yeah, my thing is always, I want to be that 70-year-old, that 80-year-old in the gym that's moving well and looking good and showing the 18-year-olds how it's done. You know, it might be funny, and it might be, you know, it might be that guy, you know, that weird 80-year-old that talks to everyone and, you know, whatever. But, you know, that's that weird 80-year-old that's outlifting any 18-year-old and still feeling good. You know, it's about the long term. I don't just want to look decent now in the mirror. I want to look decent in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, exactly how you say.
Yeah. Next question then. I'm going to go with a few quick fire ones, but the answers might not necessarily be quick fire. But the next
I try and be
one
quick.
the next one is training. Keeping it interesting and keeping it engaging. So how do you go about that? Because I hear a lot of people moaning, saying, oh, my exercise regime's getting boring, or I find exercise really dull. I mean, I know, and well, we know that exercise is unlimited and we could go for infinity and still not do all the various combinations, but not everyone knows that. So what would be your advice and tips to people that say, oh, it's getting a bit boring or a bit stagnant? What's your tips for that?
I think, you know, referring back to Instagram, just because it's a prime example, people's attention is a lot less nowadays. And you're seeing a million and one different exercises on there. You know, and I'm someone that, you know, pretty much every day I'm posting a different exercise, a new exercise. And I make it clear that here's an exercise for your toolbox. You know, I'm a big fan of having a massive toolbox of exercises, so that when, for example, any client comes in front of me, I've got something I can pull out of that toolbox that's for them. That's not to mean that entire toolbox of exercises is for you, but it means I've got something that will work for you. So I'm a big fan of having a broad variety of exercises and exercise knowledge. But actually, when it comes to training, you eventually want to kind of narrow that down. So, you know, for example, a beginner and intermediate, you actually want to be quite broad with your exercise selection. And then as they get more advanced, as you find those exercises that work really well for you, that avoid pain and that you can put, you know, load across those tissues and get some results from, then you're actually going to end up naturally just narrowing those down. I'll give a prime example. You know, big fan, you know, when I was young, especially my kind of my rugby playing days, you know, everything barbell back squat, barbell deadlift, barbell bench press. And then as I went along, as I used to try different variations out, I'll go back a minute. Those caused me injuries. And those injuries are still things that actually I live with nowadays. And we're talking 10 years ago. So, you know, even nowadays, I've got a cranky left shoulder and I've got a cranky back, actually from poor technique mostly, and from playing rugby to a decent level, smashing people up, etc. So I've actually had to explore a large variety of exercises again, in a way, in order to narrow down. So I do heavy, quote unquote, heavy squat still, but a heavy squat with a safety squat bar, because it feels the best for me. It puts me at the right angle and it allows me to load my body in the right way. I don't bench press unless it's a floor press or I'm pressing with a Swiss bar, you know, or with some neutral grip dumbbells, because it's much better for my shoulder. And, you know, I'm feeling good the next day and the next week, and I can keep on loading that as much as I want to. I don't straight bar deadlift off the floor. If I do deadlift, I might, because I'm just about okay with a straight bar deadlift, just because the torque on my back, it's not bad. If I do straight bar deadlift, I'm deadlifting maybe 2 inches off the floor, or I'm deadlifting with a trap bar. So I've had to go really broad with my exercise selection to narrow down, to kind of find those, and then I've stuck with them to a degree. I'll have some slight variation within that, but those are my bread and butter lifts for a lot of the year. And I might only rotate between, let's say, a deadlift. I might only rotate between three different styles of deadlift throughout the entire year. But then to keep things interesting, my secondary, my assistance lifts, I'll rotate those a lot more often. So I'm training, I'm trying to get some progressive overload, I'm trying to get, you know, extra kilo on the bar or whatever with my key indicator lifts, and I'm logging those down in my notebook or on my phone or whatever. But then each week I might change some of the secondary or assistance exercises according to weaknesses, but it's also keeping things interesting for me. And then also it's those that you might see me post on Instagram. It's the secondary assistance lifts that are different that you're seeing me post, rather than, for example, the bread and butter lifts, which, let's be honest, nobody really cares about or wants to see. So there's some context. So I think I'll try and keep the next answer short, but this one's a big thing. This one's a big thing for me, and it's training versus working out. Working out is, you know, there's no purpose to working out. It's one workout. You feel good. You lift some weights. Whatever. Training is actually training with a purpose and trying to get some progression out of that as well. You know, it's sticking to a plan for an extended period of time, or working towards one goal for an extended period of time. And so for me, there does need to be some consistency within that program, for, you know, as I said, with those key indicator lifts for me, but then add some variety in there to keep the motivation high, to keep trying some different things, and to make sure you've got, you know, a broad range of exercises you can try. So we might be able to narrow down later as we go.
Love that. Love it. There's a few things that popped into my head when you said that last little piece. The first one is you might think, how's this relating? But the first one was, I just keep getting the word ego in my head. Ego, ego, ego. Because the problem we have in our industry with a lot of trainers is we get this big ego. The trainers get an ego and they think, oh, my way of training is the only way and there's no other way and it has to be this. And we're very similar in the fact, and I love the analogy that you used of the toolbox, because I use that myself. It's like, yeah, it's a different tool for a different person. So you wouldn't like put a picture on the wall with a screwdriver. You'd use your hammer or whatever. And it's the same with training. You got to use the right tools for that individual and have many different tools that you can pick out and use when they're needed. Horses for courses, you could say. The second thing that I wanted to point out was like having a framework
but having variety as well, I think that's what you was kind of alluding to, is like, yes, have variety in your workout, but have that kind of like, still have that structure to it, that you could, that you've got that focus and you're not getting too distracted by the shiny exercises.
That's it. With structure, just on the back end of that, you know, workouts have clear structure. So for example, as far as being consistent goes, so I might put a workout together based on, let's look at a lower body workout. So I might put a bilateral hip hinge, or two leg hip hinge, might put a single leg knee dominant movement, and then a single leg hip dominant movement. So if I'm changing an exercise, I know that I've got that order of exercises and that's what I'm using. So I'm using, you know, I'm using a bilateral hip hinge. So that might stay there for me for a few weeks. And that might be my key indicator lift, where I'm you know, let's say it's a trap bar deadlift. That's something that I'm trying to get a little bit more progression with. I'm trying to maybe only adapting it a little bit. But then my second and third exercises, so it might be a single leg knee dominant lift. Well, maybe one week it was a reverse lunge, the next week it's a forward lunge, the week after it was a sideways lunge, you know, or a single leg squat or something like that. You know, the third exercise, maybe one week it was a single leg Romanian deadlift. Maybe the next week it was a single leg Romanian deadlift using a landmine, you know, maybe it was using a kettlebell. So we're still hitting the same movement pattern, but of which we know as coaches, but the client is just seeing a different exercise. So we're loading the same movement pattern, we're keeping that consistency, and we're getting stronger in that movement pattern, but your client's seeing something fresh, something different, something exciting, and that's keeping them motivated as well. And then for us as coaches, we're also getting some feedback from them in terms of, you know, that what they liked, what they didn't like, and what felt good and what didn't. And maybe going forward, out of those few variations that we tried, maybe we'll do a little bit more of this one and a little bit less of this one.
Yeah, makes sense. When you're working with people then, Gareth, in terms of what's the best way to put this, volume, in terms of maybe numbers of sessions that they do and length of a program, again, is that independent, individual based, or do you say there's like, this is a good number of workouts to be doing per week? How does that work?
I'll normally do it in reverse. So I normally ask them, how much time do they have to allocate? You from a psychological approach, there are some people that do just like to train 7 days a week. They like to lift 7 days a week. Now, you and I know you don't need to lift 7 days per week, but they like to lift 7 days per week because it makes them feel good. And if that makes them feel good and that's going to keep them on track, then fine. I will put a program together that will, you know, that will train you 7 days a week, where, you know, you're lifting 7 days per week. But I might undulate that volume up and down during the week. So actually you've got some easy days, you've got some heavier days and whatever. So it works. You know, if you were coming from me from the get-go and I was to, and you were to say to me, okay, I just want you to put a good training program together for me. I've got some experience. I'm open to doing whatever you want. Most people are probably going to get some of their best results just doing 4 days per week. I don't think most people need much more than 4 days per week. But the difference being, over 4 days per week and 7 days per week, if you look at the total weekly volume, in an ideal world, they're actually going to be the same. It just means over 4 days, you're doing a little bit more. And over 7 days, you're just going to be doing slightly fewer, you know, slightly lower volume on each day. But your weekly volume is going to be roughly the same. The person that's going to mess themselves up, and we talk about long term here, and especially mess yourselves up in terms of, you know, sapping your testosterone levels as a man, is if you're training 7 days per week as though you're someone that's doing four workouts per week. You know, you're smashing 35, 40 sets per workout over 7 days per week. Well, that's a prime recipe for disaster and, yeah, long-term, you know, testosterone suppression and things like that. So, you know, as I say, it is one of those things that's going to alter depend on what frequency you can do. But if you're training, for example, 6 or 7 days per week, I'm going to make you aware that your volume needs to be a little bit less just to accommodate for kind of what you need, really.
Yeah. Next question is in relation to, in air quotes, like functional training. So I love the videos and the stuff that you put on Instagram, because you do a lot of I call it like multi-planar training, triplanar, or moving in different directions and working different joints, muscle groups. And I love all that kind of stuff. My question is in relation to clients, because from experience, you have like these clients, and I always think you can fit them into like three groups in terms of their training style. You get like this kind of traditional person that like loves the old school lift, like bench press and squats and deadlifts and all that kind of stuff. Then you get the people that the opposite end of that spectrum that love all the funky stuff. Like if you got them to do like a side lunge with the arm above the head whilst like rapping or something, they'd absolutely love it. And then you get the middle people, which are like hybrid, which is what I think I'm like, where you like a mix of both of those things.
Yeah.
So my question is do you ever use those kind of, in air quotes again, more funky, like functional exercises with the more traditional folk, and do they take to it well, or do you just not bother with that?
I know what you're getting at. I think the term, I will use the term functional, and I'll use it a lot, but I don't believe there is necessarily such a thing as quote unquote functional. Because to me, any exercise that's functional is an exercise that has some kind of transference onto a real world activity. Now, what I think traditionally we're believed to be taught is quote unquote functional are exercises like, I don't know, a plank, for example, people deem as being functional. Well, how is being in a plank position functional? Maybe it's functional if you're at a supermarket, you've dropped something underneath the aisle, you've got to get down the plank to look underneath the aisle or something to see what's there. Maybe it's functional in that scenario. But you know, most exercises can be functional if you think about it from a real world perspective. What's most functional is strength. If you get stronger, it's going to transfer over to everything that you do. So as I said, I'm not a big fan of that term functional, because technically, you know, most things can be functional providing they improve strength. But to me, functional is, you know, being able to apply to some kind of real world activity. And whatever that real world activity is for you, that's up to you. What's going to be a functional exercise for a rock climber is going to be different than a functional exercise for a rugby player. Well, for a rugby player, a bicep curl can be functional because it's going to be able to help me rip the ball off of you if I've got big arms. So, you know, anything can kind of be functional. I'm a big fan of training your weakest links. One of the weakest links is being able to move sideways, you know, in that frontal plane, because everyone's used to squatting and bench pressing, whatever, and it's very kind of sagittal plane. It's all moving forwards and backwards. Yet if you ask someone to move sideways, they're very, very weak. Well, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So I'm going to be hitting you with some movements where you're going to have to move sideways. You might have to be able to do some rotary kind of work within that as well. So yeah, unfortunately, you know, even if you come into me just for big pecs, I'm going to be making you do some stuff that's maybe a little bit different and outside your comfort zone, because that's your weakest point. And your body's not going to get any stronger unless those weak points are, you know, are in a good place.
Makes sense. Definitely. Let's touch on, whilst we've still got time, let's touch on supplements, because this is obviously something you'll get asked a lot about, and you've already mentioned it. And you've got your own supplement company. So can you talk a little bit about how supplements come into what you do, and also tell us a little bit about MyoBand as well, and maybe we can pick that apart a little bit with the supplements.
Well, MyoBand actually isn't my own company. It's a company where I'm the fitness director of. And actually it's owned by a couple of guys, and I'm a big part of that company. And as I said, I was brought on as the fitness director. So anything that's fitness related and how supplements kind of translate to fitness, I'm kind of in control of. You know, at the moment, for example, I'm helping them develop a pre-workout for some reason. They've never brought out a pre-workout, even though it's a massive, massive thing. There's a massive market for it, but they've never brought one out because everyone's chasing the same thing. It's kind of a quick fix pre-workout with lots of stim in there, you know, lots of caffeine in there, lots of caffeine anhydrous, and something that's just going to give you the biggest buzz you possibly can. And then I don't know whether you notice any new pre-workout that comes on the market tends to get banned about 3 weeks down the line because there's something in there that's not been tested. Now it's been tested and that's a little bit dodgy. We need to take that out. So things get banned a lot, and there's also not a lot of research put into these actual pre-workouts. So we're putting together a pre-workout at the moment that has a lot of science-backed ingredients. So if anyone comes and questions anything, then we've always got the research to back that up. And the problem is with that is that I suppose sometimes the industry is a little bit ahead of the research. So your research professors almost have to get the ideas from the people that are applying it before they test that hypothesis and whether something works. So we might know something that a caffeine anhydrous might affect us quicker than a regular caffeine, yet caffeine anhydrous doesn't have, or many other forms of caffeine, doesn't have a lot of research behind it in terms of whether it works or not. Yet if I gave you 200 milligrams of anhydrous versus 200 milligrams, just from a Pro Plus truck stopper pill or something from a gas station, you're gonna know the difference. The anhydrous is gonna hit you a lot quicker. You're gonna feel something. So that's the problem, in that research is a little bit behind that. So trying to develop supplements that work, but also have that research behind it is difficult. I am someone that does recommend supplements, but I recommend supplements from a they are to supplement your diet standpoint.
Yeah.
Let's look at your diet. Well, what's missing from your diet, rather than what supplements do I need? We know most people probably need to be taking a vitamin D3. Something like 90% of the population in the UK are going to be vitamin D deficient. So you probably need to be taking that. You probably need to be taking some omega-3s in some form, or some krill oil in some form, because most people aren't getting enough oily fish. So we can pretty much say that most people need those. But then when we look at your diet, do you need to supplement that with extra protein powder? Do we need to introduce some B vitamins around there? Are you getting enough greens? Do we need to give you a green supplement just to kind of accommodate for that a little bit? So again, it's about looking at your diet and where you're falling short on. And then after that, we might be, okay, how can we optimize your intra-workout nutrition? Maybe we look into some hydrolyzed casein or some EAAs during your workout or something. Maybe you need some pre-workout sometimes. That's the final thing we look at. But first of all, we're looking at, okay, what do we need? Where are the missing gaps? How can we fill that with supplements?
Yeah, and it's amazing how big an impact just plugging a few of those gaps can have, isn't it? You can just get somebody taking one or two or even five supplements, and they feel like a whole new person just because you've literally filled some of those gaps.
100%. And it goes back to our conversation a while ago. Some of the first questions I ask is how much sleep are you getting? What's your sleep quality like? And how much are you drinking? Well, there are people that are not optimizing their sleep and not drinking enough, yet they're asking the questions of, what pre-workout do I need to take? And, what testosterone boosters do I need to have? Well, if you slept an extra couple of hours, simply by turning your phone off a few hours beforehand, or having a hot bath in the evening, or wearing some blue light blocking glasses or something, your testosterone levels will shoot through the roof after a few weeks, and you've not spent much money on that, if any. Again, the low hanging fruit. So although I'm a big part of a supplement company, I know its place. I'm not always going to be promoting something that people don't necessarily need if there are easier options for people to aim for.
Definitely. Couple more questions, mate, before we wrap up. First one, and I like to give the listeners actionable tips or actionable steps that they can put into practice straight away. So if you had to give the listeners three tips to put into practice almost straight away that would help them to do all the stuff that we've been talking about, so look good, naked, 365, three tips, what would they be?
I think we'll go down that training, nutrition, supplement route. So I think we'll go training first of all. Don't think about what the next best training program is for you. Simply look at what you're doing right now. look at what's working and what isn't. If something isn't working, if one exercise doesn't feel good out of that program, if a certain repetition range doesn't feel good out of that program, just swap that one thing. So delete what's not working for you rather than going to a completely different training program and, you know, program hopping all the time. So that's one thing I'd suggest doing. Second thing, as far as nutrition's concerned, again, on a similar line, rather than looking at what's the next best diet for you, maybe I might jump from keto to intermittent fasting to a meat-only diet to something else. Now, I'm not opposed to any of those because I've trained a lot of people and worked with a lot of people that have used a lot of those, and some things work better for other people than others. And, you know, I'm not someone that's vegan, but actually I do find there are some people that do better with a healthy vegan diet versus a healthy non-vegan diet. There are some people that can do better on certain things. So I'm not opposed to any diet, but again, look at what you're currently eating and look at the things that, you know, that shouldn't have a part within that. Look at the low hanging fruit in terms of, is it what I'm eating in the evening that's letting me down? Is it that extra 200 calories? Are those extra 200 calories sneaking in, in the evening? What can I swap that for? Can I get slightly better here? Am I eating some junk first thing in the morning that's then affecting the rest of the day just from a mindset perspective? Okay, well, let's look at just changing that morning up. So again, looking at your current diet and what you can maybe adapt or delete out of that to put in something that's positive, rather than trying to jump to another diet all the time and things like that. Final, as I said, on the supplements point of view, I would say, you know, back to our conversation, most people do need a vitamin D3. Especially at the moment in the UK, lots of cloud coverage, no direct sun exposure, and lots of people do need to take an omega-3 or like a krill oil supplement. And I would always look at taking those, and I would see those as my bases before you start to think about the extra supplements on top of that. So what are the supplements I need for my lifestyle and to improve my health? And then after we've improved our health or got up to a baseline, then we can start look at those supplements that might give you that extra 1%, 2% edge. Then, you know, we can look at the pre-workouts, we can look at the fancy stuff, we can look at the testosterone boosters, etc. But only look at those once you've nailed the basics, which, as I said, for me, most of the time is going to be a D, is going to be a fish oil or a krill oil. Or if you want to go and get a blood panel done that will say exactly what you're deficient in and what you need, then obviously that's the better option if you have access to that.
Love it. Amazing, mate. Well, thanks so much for your time, Gareth. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure we could do it again and probably go a bit deeper on some of these topics. But I think it's been a nice kind of rounded overview that will definitely help a lot of people. Before we wrap up, mate, where can the listeners go to find out more about you and get all of your information?
I'm the Fitness Maverick everywhere. So website is thefitnessmaverick.com. I put up articles and things like that and links through to interesting stuff on there. And there's like an about me page and things if you want to find more about me. I'm at the Fitness Maverick on Instagram. I'm the Fitness Maverick on Facebook. So the Fitness Maverick everywhere.
Love it. That was meant to be my original question, so I'm going to ask it now. Why the Fitness Maverick? Why?
It's not a long story. Someone just randomly called me years ago and they just said, you're a bit of a fitness maverick, aren't you? And I was like, oh, I kind of like that. And then it just kind of stuck and people just started calling me Maverick. This is a gym I co-owned. And they just started calling me Maverick. So it just kind of stuck. So when I went out on my own, I just used the Fitness Maverick and used it more and more and more. And then people used to comment about how good it is for my marketing. So it was one of those things that kind of accidentally fell in place, really. There was no marketing idea or anything behind it. It just kind of stuck and ended up working out pretty well.
Love it. We always end my show in the same way, mate, and that's with a favorite quote. So hit us with a favorite quote and we're done.
Going off the back end of everything we discussed today, I think we would be giving a lot of power to your listeners if we simply use the quote, information without action is useless. And I know that sounds a little bit in your face, but you know, we're in a world where we're consuming a lot of data and a lot of information, and we're not acting on it. So as I said, information without action is useless.
Action takers win always.
100%.
Love it, mate. Thank you so much for your time, and I wish you all the success, mate, for the future.
Absolute pleasure. I'll chat to you soon, Ali.
Cheers.
That's a wrap on another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Until next time, peace and love.